experience.
Sure. And then, of course, then you get to eat like a local. But I want to make one other comment here. And I know this is, you'll laugh about this, Roger, but you'll be laughing with me for a change. The other day, I said to one of my assistants, hey, can you call this restaurant and get me a reservation? And he came back 10 minutes later saying, there are no seats available. They have no tables available at all. I said, did you call them? And he said, no, he just went on Open Table. And of course, it all came back saying full. I said, no, it's called having a conversation. Here's what you do. Walk to the desk, pick up the phone, talk to a human being, and I'll show you how it's done. And of course, they did have a table. So don't always think that even though every one of these cities that has a restaurant week, it's all going to be sold out. Yes, they're going to be block booking a lot of tables, but they're not going to be block booking all of them. And they always hold back. The biggest myth about the internet is that you think all the inventory is on the web. No, it's only the inventory they want to put on the web. So before you give up hope, pick up phone. And I know you'll agree with that.
I totally agree with that. Is for Open Table and the various restaurant booking engines, the restaurants usually put 50 to 60% of their tables on there. They may not even put their prime time, like 7:30, 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. They may give them zero because they want to make sure they maintain their local contacts, people who call them, people walk in. So there's always, there's not only one seat, there's lots of seats available in person. And I think that's a great idea. And give them a rationale why you want to be there. Come here so frequently, it'd be a shame for me not to be able to come back to my favorite restaurant. You know, people love the repeat special occasions, things like that. But you're exactly right. They do not put all their seats on Open Table or the other booking engines whatsoever, maybe half to 60%.
And by the way, the same thing applies to the airlines. Just because you go on Orbitz or Kayak or Expedia doesn't mean and you see that little, announcement on Orbitz, only three seats available. Yeah, only three seats available in their inventory pool, not the airline's inventory pool, just in their inventory pool. The other night, I had to book a flight, right? And here was the flight. I was booking it for one of the people on my show, and it was a pretty long, involved ticket, which I said, you know what? I'm going to try to do this online, and then I'll try to do it on the phone. I did it online, and the coach ticket, this is, by the way, within the United States. It was a ticket from New York to Minneapolis, then Minneapolis to Chicago, Chicago to Phoenix, Phoenix to Burbank, and Los Angeles back to New York. Okay, a multi-city ticket. And, you know, every time I got to a little line on the web, I would hit add another flight. By the time it was over, the cheapest flight it would give me online was $2,300. Then I picked up the phone. I followed my own advice. I talked to a human being. I gave them the exact same inventory and the exact same flights. What do you think the fare was? I remember it distinctly, Roger. What do you think?
I think it was $854.
$487.
Whoa.
And the reason why it was $487 is because the computer at the airline, not the computer on the web, but the computer at the airline saw that I started the trip in New York. Even though I went to Minnesota and Chicago and Phoenix and Berwick, I came back to New York. So it interpreted it as a round-trip ticket with stops in between, and that's how the fare got as low as it was.
Yes, and I think when you call the airlines or when you're at the counter, you've got to remember something. This person has the ability to really help you or make it really tough on you. And I always, even though I'm a very frequent traveler, I'm always, when I go to the counter, I'm saying, look, I don't know a whole lot about travel. I'm looking for a good price so I hopefully can afford to take this trip. Can you help me? That's a hell of a lot different than, I can't believe it was X thousand dollars on the web. You either get your prices down or I'm going somewhere else. I find take that person and say, can you help me? I need your assistance. You know about that. You often get a much more engaged agent than the person you just take on cold.
Except for one small problem in what you just said, Roger, because you lied. You said you didn't know a lot about travel, and we know you know a lot about travel because you're Roger Dow. Roger Dow from the USTA. That's a lie I'll accept just for the purposes of the show because we love you, man. Thanks for joining us. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, Mexico. And that's no lie right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
42 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. If you're taking a look at hospitality and hotels and their evolution over the last 25 years, beyond just the traditional hotels, you had a wave of timeshares. And the original timeshares were started by people who just would take over failed apartment buildings and throw the dice and hope for the best. And people would buy them because they thought it was a great idea. And then they got stuck with them, which was not a great idea, when the management took off. And then they had such a bad reputation that many corporations, including Hyatt, came in and started running their own operations with the credibility and the legacy of those brands, whether it was Hilton, Hyatt, Disney, you name it, they did that. Then came the whole idea that you could trade, you could share, you could buy 1 week or 2 weeks and go anywhere you wanted. And there was a whole market for that. And then came the all-inclusives. And the all-inclusive was a great idea. I believe, and my next guest will probably correct me if I'm wrong, it was really started in the Caribbean. And a lot of resorts were doing that. Then they had definitional problems of what really constituted an all-inclusive. And you know, the worst word in the lexicon is not even a word, it's a symbol, is the asterisk. Because you have an all-inclusive with an asterisk, and the next thing you know, it was like, here's all the things it's not including. And the original all-inclusives, the food sucked. It was sort of like, guess the age of the mystery hot dog in the rotisserie. And now things have evolved. I mean, they have really gone upscale, full scale. And in Cancun, especially on the smaller scale, you've got a place here called Le Blanc, which does a great job, and they truly have defined all-inclusive. I mean, it's unbelievable. Even your phone calls are free. And then the larger resorts have gone all-inclusive and started by the Hyatt guys here. In fact, we broadcast from one of them in Jamaica last year, the Hyatt Ziva in Montego Bay. And now we've got the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun. And joining me here, the senior VP of all global, all-inclusive operations worldwide and intergalactically, Carlos Cabrera.
Good morning, Peter.
How
great
are you, man?
I'm very good.
Great so you heard my introduction. It was a long introduction, but I did it that way so that we could talk a little bit about really what this means and what a corporation like Hyatt does, because you're putting your name behind something.
Right.
Like you did with the original all-inclusives and the timeshares, right?
Right.
But you've had to change, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. You know, we've been doing a lot of research. Obviously, we're at a place where we want to grow and we want to look for new customers. We want to be at new resort destinations. And I personally have been working in the resort business for almost 30 years. And we've been looking at all-inclusives. We started looking at it back in 2012. And
there's one way to look at it, then you have to define it.
Yeah, then you have to define it. And you know, we saw the opportunities that existed there. The research told us that all-inclusives had a certain perception, and there were opportunities there. There were opportunities to up the game.
Because they weren't delivering.
Right. Right. There was an opportunity to improve on the amenities, improve on the service, but especially the food and beverage. The food and beverage is what really attracted Hyatt to it.
And you know what? I remember the original all-inclusives. They had one kitchen and one restaurant.
Yeah. And also, you know, buffets, big buffets, putting out just massive amounts of food. And
that was the old Club Med approach.
The old Club Med. So we wanted to look into it. And what we wanted to do was offer the a la carte experience, to do exhibition kitchens, and the other thing that
involved the guests.
But the other thing that really that we really thought was good is that in the resorts that we did, we always tried wherever we were, whether we were in the Caribbean, whether we were in Hawaii, whether we were in New Mexico, we always tried to create a sense of place, you know, make it very authentic, make it very indigenous to the area. And we thought here, you know, with the all-inclusives, this was a unique opportunity to continue to expand on that.
But the cool thing about this place, you got 8 different restaurant venues here, so you can get a quesadilla, but you can also get dim sum.
Yeah, you can get dim sum. We have Asian fusion. We have French. We've got a little bit of everything here.
And you got dessert, so you're in big trouble, isn't it?
And we have a heck of a dessert place. Yeah, desserts, ice creams, cookies.
And 24/7 in some of these places.
And 24/7. Each one of our all-inclusives has a 24-hour lounge, which guests can come in at any time and have a cocktail, have maybe some hors d'oeuvres, or have some little finger sandwiches.
So basically what you're saying, it's a total snacking festival. Carlos Cabrera, the Senior Vice President of Snacking here at Hyatt. Hey, Carlos, thanks for joining us.
You're most welcome.
We'll be back with more from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, if they can get me out of the dessert bar.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know, that's what you do, because you give us your name, your phone number, your question or your problem. We will solve it right here on the air. That's you do that by writing to me at peter@petergreenberg.com. And we'll be doing that throughout the show. You know, leave it to a hotel in Cancun to not just have a bar. Nah, they have a number of different bars. But what they've done here now is they've developed an entire program. When you think about tequila, you find out very quickly what you don't know. And what you don't know is that there's something like 1,500 brands of tequila in Mexico. And that's, we're just getting started. So, of course, who better to know about that than somebody who's on the staff here who has the great title of the tequila sommelier. And his name is Eduardo Perez. How are you, sir?
Very good. I'm happy.
So was I right with that number? It's like 1,500.
Yeah, more than that probably, because we have different brands, but the people, they don't know that we have more styles, right? We have five styles of tequila. I'm talking that we have a thousand of tequilas here.
Right here at the hotel?
Not here in the hotel, but we expect to have around 140 different kind of tequilas to give a special distinctive to the hotel.
So let's talk about the different kinds, because, I mean, we're familiar with certain brands in the U.S. You know, there's Patron and there's Jose Cuervo.
The most popular there,
of course.
Know.
That's branding for you. But what would you say is the difference between the tequilas? Because just with 140, what's the range? I mean, some of them will basically knock you out, and some of them, what?
Well, we have, I told you, with different styles, and we can call the styles because we are talking about tequilas. So the five styles, we can start with a silver. So it would be nice if you call in Spanish, because it's a Mexican product, so we can call like blanco. Tequila blanco means that it's not aged. It's directly from the distill, and we bottle it, the product. So probably we can see the product like water, but normally it doesn't taste like water. It's very...
It's strong.
We cannot say that it's strong because it's not a strong beverage. We say that it has character, like a personality of the persons, because when you make the tequila adopts a character and taste different each other.
Now, you understand the difference. When we talk about somebody in America, if we think somebody is crazy and they have no money, we call them crazy. If they're crazy and they have a lot of money, we call them eccentric.
Okay.
You understand? They have character.
Yeah.
So you have some pretty crazy tequilas then.
Exactly.
Yeah, I want to make sure we're on the same level here. Okay. But they vary in terms of strength. They vary in terms of quality. They vary in terms of price. So what would you say is your most expensive tequila here?
Wow, the most expensive bottle of tequila was sold in $100 million, because they don't sell the product, you know? They try to sell a beautiful bottle, and it was 4 kilograms of platinum and more than 4,000 diamonds. So probably you can find a very, very expensive bottle of tequila, but it doesn't say that it could be the best one, right? You know? So
what you're saying, you're keeping the bottle.
Exactly.
No matter what happens, you are keeping the bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Probably, you know, different brands, and you can buy the bottle by the beautiful, beautiful bottle that they represent. They try to use marketing.
Now, one of the myths about tequila is the worm, because it's not, that's mezcal, isn't it?
That's mezcal, exactly.
And what's the difference between mezcal and tequila?
Well, normally it's a little bit hard to say what is the difference, but we can identify just when you taste the product, you can see the difference between the two products, because the mezcal is very, very smoky, because the process that they use, it's more complex. They cook the agaves and they make a hole in the ground, but they use a different kind of wood, like mesquite wood, and they cover it with the same land, and they put all the pineapples of the agave plant inside of the ground.
Because the plant is called the piña.
Exactly. We call the piña. We call the piña because it looks like a pineapple.
But it's all
fruit.
It's bigger.
It's bigger, like 150 pounds.
It weighs a whole lot more, I know.
Yeah.
But the worm, is it just symbolic, or does it have a real reason for taste?
A long time ago they put the worm inside because they tried to identify the tequila from the mezcal. But now they just like marketing. The people recognize the mezcal with the worm inside. It's very popular to
identify. Does anybody drink the worm?
You can eat it and it's delicious. Yeah.
Tastes just like chicken? No, I'm just kidding.
No, no, it's no. different.
Of course, by that time, it's completely
No, you should taste it. It's delicious, that one, that thing.
What's the most interesting tequila you sell here? The one that people don't have any idea about?
All right. There's a tequila that you cannot find in the States or any part in the States. It's very difficult. The name is Siete Leguas, and you can recognize the bottle with the seven and the horse there. So that tequila, I know the brand, I know the factory, so that tequila is really, really artisanal. It's delicious, that tequila. It's very complex, we can say something like that.
It's got a lot of character.
Yeah, with a lot of character and a lot of flavors inside, so it's so you it's, can enjoy
so, it. So it's crazy.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Okay, deliciously crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to make sure we're just on the same wavelength here, okay.
All right, it's crazy.
But most of the people who come here, mm-hmm. not just to this hotel, but to Mexico, they don't really have a clue about the different gradations of tequila. You have to educate them.
Exactly. That's the thing that I do here in the hotel. I try to help other people to identify what is the best product that they can enjoy, right? Because the people, they don't know about the tequilas. Probably you can get very easy in the States, the Jose Cuervo, very famous tequila there. But probably it's one of the tequilas that you can get there. It's the easiest. But here in Mexico, we have a lot of ones. So when you arrive here to Mexico, you need to enjoy. You need to find to taste different ones.
So what you have to do is you have to go see Eduardo and say you're sampling, you'd like the taste, you move in, you never leave, and you're not leaving until you drink all 140.
Oh, there are another, well, you can start with tasting three different ones.
And if you can get past three, you can do anything.
Exactly. First, we need to taste three. When you find the style that you prefer, we can taste another ones with the same style.
You promise?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Eduardo Perez, the tequila sommelier right here at the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun. That music means we are out of time for this hour. Stick around, everybody. We got a whole lot more coming from Cancun, Mexico, and the Hyatt Ziva when Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns, assuming I get past the third tequila. Back right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. If you're just joining us, no problem whatsoever. Let me tell you where we are. Get out those maps, boys and girls. 21 degrees, 10 minutes north, 86 degrees, 50 minutes west. We're in Mexico, in Cancun, and in particular, the brand new Hyatt Ziva in Cancun. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And as someone who's been coming down to Cancun for many, many years, it's a nice, refreshing situation to see a hotel that's figured it out in an all-inclusive way that truly defines all-inclusive without the dreaded asterisk. I mean, they've got 9 restaurants here on site. You eat what you want, when you want. 3 infinity pools, 547 guest rooms, but you don't feel like there's, you know, you're stuck in Grand Central Station because it's a big piece of property. So more about that, of course, as we get through the show. But just want to, you know, it's nice to see that Hyatt is putting their name on something because it's a recognized brand, and they're trying to figure out from the mistakes of others how to do something right. Let's go to some emails right away. Here's one from George Kiever. He says, my son was going from Newark back to Chicago O'Hare. Anyone near a TV or a radio for the previous days realized what a mess Chicago and the Midwest in general was. Several calls to United Airlines in the morning said that their 4:40 flight that afternoon was on time. So my son boards a bus from Central Jersey to Newark at 1 p.m. to get to Newark at 2:30. He is on the bus maybe 10 minutes before he gets a text telling him of a half-hour delay. Several texts later with various lengths of delay, and he ends up leaving Newark at 9:45 that evening, about 5 hours late. Now, you can't tell me, this is George speaking now, you can't tell me that United never had a hope that day or even the previous night that any flights to O'Hare or the Midwest would happen on time. Instead of readjusting the departure time, countless passengers are duped into wasting 5 hours or so at the airport when it was avoidable. Is this airline incompetence, or is it maliciously intended to satisfy some airline metric? Okay, here's the deal. No, this is not airline incompetence. This is airline, which equals incompetence. Look, here's the deal. Anytime in winter months, when you're scheduling a flight after 8 o'clock in the morning, there's an 80% chance it's going to be delayed. Not because it was going to be delayed, but because the flight that it was on preceding that, that was coming to you, that piece of airplane, that piece of metal flying through the air that was coming to get you, was delayed 3 or 4 other legs earlier. And it's not just the weather at O'Hare. It's the weather at LaGuardia. If LaGuardia is socked in, O'Hare is not going to operate really well because chances are one of those flights is coming from LaGuardia. And it just mushrooms and mushrooms and mushrooms. So the first rule, I got 3 rules for you. And if you follow these rules, I can't guarantee you're going to get to where you want to go, but I will guarantee you won't get beaten up as badly. Okay? Number one, you don't call the airline and say, is my flight on time? Because they'll come back with a lie. And the lie is yes, because they're interpreting that question to mean, is it scheduled to leave on time? That means nothing. That is meaningless information. You call the airline and say, hey, I'm on flight 407 from Newark to Chicago. Could you give me the tail number of the plane assigned to that flight? Oh, it's tail number 383. Thank you so much. Could you tell me where tail number 383 is right now? Oh, it's in the former Yugoslavia. Well, I guess I'm not going to Chicago at 4:40 in the afternoon. And right then and there on the phone, you know more information than they're prepared to give you, but it's valid information. And you then say, okay, now that we've established that that aircraft is not showing up at Newark until next Thursday, can you please protect me on another flight? And then go through the same exact ritual and find out the tail number of that plane, because it may also be in Bosnia. I mean, so that's what you got to figure out. That's number one. Number two, the problem goes even beyond that to when you first made your reservation. And this is what the airlines won't tell you, because about 75% of us are going to be on a connecting flight to get to where we want to go. We got to go from A to B to get to C. It's the B part that's going to screw you up, because the airlines will determine that a legal connection is 37 minutes. No, that's a lethal connection. There's no such thing. And with every plane flying full today, if you miss that connection, there may be another flight 2 hours later, but there won't be any seats available because that's also full. So I don't care what the airline tells you is a legal connection. It's not a smart connection. So give yourself 2 hours minimum, sometimes they'd even say 2.5, between flights, especially if you're checking bags. Otherwise, you'll be playing catch up for 3 weeks, all right? That's what you got to do. Now, the real question you wanted to know is there any kind of compensation for your delay? And the answer is no in this situation, because as you said in your email to me, he actually got out. He got out within 5 hours of when he was supposed to go. The only time there's compensation is if he doesn't get out at all, or if he pushes back from the gate and they keep him out there on the tarmac for more than 3 hours. That's the tarmac delay rule, which no airline wants to get killed with, because the fines start at a lot and end up at $27,500 per passenger if they don't get you back to the gate within 3 hours if they weren't going to go in the first place. So if you want to look and see, since they passed this rule, how many delays of over 3 hours there have been in the U.S. in maybe 5 years, maybe 4. And nobody got charged the full $27,000. Those fines got negotiated down. But the bottom line is it got the airline's attention. They're able now to do preemptive cancellations when, in fact, they know it's not going to work. Because remember, after you exceed a certain amount of time, guess what happens? The airline comes out of sequence. The airline crews come out of cycle and they become illegal in terms of their time. They literally time out and there's not another crew to fly the plane. So if you know this is going to happen early enough, you cancel the plane, you leave it on the ground, you leave your assets where they're supposed to be, you leave your flight crews where they're supposed to be, so nobody's misconnecting and everybody starts again the next day hoping it gets better. But that doesn't necessarily help you. The information you want, or that your son wants, is before you ever leave home, to ask the aircraft number or the tail number of the plane assigned to your flight. If you don't have that information, you're not going anywhere. Because unless you're, the only exception that would be is if you're, and you mentioned Newark, well, that's the real big base other than Chicago for United Airlines. They have an opportunity there maybe to swap out planes. But if you're in Cincinnati or you're in Boise or you're in Milwaukee, there's no other plane to swap out. You're going to the bookstore and getting a copy of War and Peace because that's what you're going to be reading. Now, you don't have to do that if you smartly call ahead of time and say, can you please tell me the tail number assigned to my plane? And if they don't want to tell you, the beautiful thing about calling an 800 number for the airline is it is toll-free. You get to hang up and call somebody who will tell you. That's information that's easily accessible on their computer. And as long as you tell them why and they'll play along, that's information that's truly useful for you and it will help you. It will delay the delay, if you know what I mean. Maybe even avoid the delay. All right? You got it. Back with more from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun when Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work all around the world. Opportunities for you to get up close and involved in personal ways every time you travel, whether it's a three-hour version in the morning, a weekend day, or you bookend it on a trip that you're doing on a week-long basis. What you get back from what you give back is exponential in return. I encourage you to do it. And in that vein, we always try to localize the volunteerism opportunities, and Cancun is no exception. There's a group here called Amerispan. They offer a variety of volunteer opportunities that actually help everybody here in Cancun, from social service projects to environmental projects. When you come to Cancun, you can find the right volunteering fit for you. You can do everything from beach clubs to working at local animal shelters. It's a great idea. And the program ranges for a couple of hours to, if you really want it, all the way up to a couple of months. And here's the part that really appeals to me. No special skills are required. And it's open to anybody over the age of 18. If you want any more information about what Amerispan is doing down here in Cancun, that's easy. Go to www.goabroad.com/providers/Amerispan study abroad, or I'll make it easy for you. Just go to our website, petergreenberg.com. We'll tell you all about Amerispan and, of course, every other opportunity out there, no matter where in the world you're traveling. But we're traveling here to Cancun, and my next guest knows a little bit about it because he's been down here for 15 years. He's a perfect expat, if I ever saw one. He's the reporter for USA Today, our good pal Rudy Garcia. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, Peter. Good to see you again.
I mean, you've seen all the changes. I mean, I remember 15 years ago, and I'll explain this to you so we put it in perspective. If somebody said to me, what do you think about Cancun? A lot of people say, oh, well, that's like a bad Miami beach, right? Mm-hmm. You've heard that so many times.
Absolutely.
Right? And then you had
it was on its way to being that.
And it was. And then all of a sudden, you had the hurricane. Mm-hmm. And the hurricane, as devastating as it was also a wake-up call about how you develop a location like this.
Absolutely.
And there were lessons to be learned there, especially in terms of the recovery efforts, when you saw what the private sector did, not what the government did, what the private sector did to fix the beach, to fix the trees, to fix the roads. They did it faster than the government did, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the quasi-government corporations like electricity.
Of course, but I'm talking about the hotel guys.
But in terms of the hotel guys did a great job. In terms of the beach, what it did was it spurred all three. It spurred all three levels of government as well as the private sector to get together. They had been arguing for years as to who was going to come up with the money to recover the beaches that had suffered from a whole lot of erosion. Right. When that happened, we were left mainly with rocks and hardly any sand.
I saw those big bags they brought in, and they did it, and it worked.
It worked. And not only that, but they set up a permanent funding source so that now they don't have to go back and start arguing each time.
Nobody has to knock on the door.
Yeah,
they got it.
There's some designated money that's constantly going in there, and they monitor, and every year if they see in one section there's been some erosion, they go and try and fix it and so on. So the effort has been extraordinary.
And you've seen the evolution from the big high-rise beachfront hotels to what we're doing right now, staying here at the Hyatt Ziva, which is all-inclusive.
Oh, absolutely. The Riviera Maya is probably 65-70% all-inclusive. And Cancun has turned to where it's at least half of that is all-inclusive now. I'll tell you, one of the marvelous things about this, one of the reasons I love this hotel, even though it's just open, about a year and a half or so ago, when Hyatt and Playa Hotels got together, I remember the press conference with Fernando Garcia Salvidea, God rest his soul, one who died. They got together when Hyatt decided to go into the all-inclusive market because Garcia Salvidea had demonstrated real expertise in operating all-inclusive resorts. So they got together, and this area right here used to be the Camino Real.
It was a Westin. It was a Westin.
No.
Well, Camino Real was Westin. Trust me.
Yeah, but after that,
I know.
Garcia Salvidea,
right?
And they took over this place. The thing is that when they got together, it was a perfect match, because Garcia Salvidea, which was Playa Resorts and Hotels or whatever, they knew this market in terms of all inclusive, in this Riviera Cancun or Cancun Riviera Maya. And Hyatt knows how to operate hotels. They got together and they made this one, the Zilara, which is adult, no children kind of thing. And this has been a big boon for Cancun itself, because all of the new hotels, for the most part, are either on the beach part of Isla Mujeres, it's on continental side, which is where the Elegance and some of those in Playa Mujeres are, or else outside of the of Cancun and down towards the Riviera Maya. This one is a major luxury all-inclusive resort.
And, you know, for years and years and years, people would say to me every time I'm coming to Mexico, oh, be careful, be safe, because of all the reports about all the drug cartels and all the fighting. And I kept on telling them that the drug cartel wars were the Mexicans against the Mexicans. Americans weren't being targeted at all. And that's still true today.
Yeah, not only that, in addition to which, we didn't even have that problem between cartels
in Cancun.
Here in Cancun.
No, Nuevo Laredo and up there.
There were other areas over there, and even Querétaro, Acapulco, around that area. As a matter of fact, they had a couple of pitch battles in the middle of the street in Acapulco, but we never had anything similar to that here. And I remember that both governors got upset. Felix Gonzalez before Roberto Jorge, and they both went to Texas and started raising the Dickens there and telling, "Hey, we've got
a map.
Yeah, we've got in Quintana Roo, we've got cities that are five times safer than Houston."
And you know what? If you look at the numbers, they're absolutely right.
Yeah,
I know. And anytime you do an all-inclusive where it's all you can eat, how can you fight?
Mm-hmm.
You're too busy eating.
Or drinking.
Or you see, you had to say drinking. What's the one thing that you think has changed here that's not for the better? I'm not talking about the hotel. I'm talking about the region.
Basically, infrastructure has not kept up with its growth. And I'm talking about roads and cities and even public services. For instance, The main highway between here and Playa del Carmen, across from where Cirque du Soleil is now, right? A whole stretch of the highway collapsed a few months ago. Well, it was like poor design and poor construction and not paying attention to what they had underneath. They had one of these freshwater pools, cenote.
So it collapsed. Yeah.
And so it collapsed. The thing is that it's a problem that's throughout all of Mexico, and it really some people say it's a little bit better here, but not a whole lot. It's the government corruption, and it's always been a problem, and it continues to be a problem. On the other hand, the last two governors that we've had have been totally committed to tourism.
Because of the economic impact, it's huge.
And the thing is that, like, for instance, we had over at the end of this year, we were hovering at 98.8% hotel room occupancy rate.
Nobody can match that.
That's right. Nobody in America. And part of it was due to the work that people like the current governor, Roberto Borja, has done with the two guys in charge of the promotional organizations.
Sure, but what you first got to do is get the roads fixed. So the whole idea here is if you can survive the roads, have we got a resort for you.
That's right. because the whole thing in terms of public works and so on is, how much of it can we put in our pocket and how much do we have to spend on materials?
Exactly. But the bottom line is when you take a look at the economic impact in terms of GDP of what a tourism economy provides, pretty soon it's not even arguable they get a chance to do that. We're talking to Rudy Garcia from USA Today. Rudy, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure always with
you. I'll see you out on the roads.
Absolutely.
Okay.
As long as we don't fall in.
Back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, where the roads are pretty nice, actually. Back right after this.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. Now, I have an admission to make, and if you're honest with me, you'll probably make the same admission, whether you're in Cancun in Mexico or in Montana or in Minneapolis, it doesn't really matter. When you're traveling on the road, how do you stay healthy? How do you stay on a diet? About 99% of you, including me, the answer is you don't. You'll eat more than you should. You'll eat what you shouldn't do anyway, and you'll do it in volume. You won't exercise. You think you do. People don't really stick to a regimen, and they indulge, and they pig out. My next author knows a lot about that because she's the author of a book called Mile High and Healthy, and her name is Jane McAllister. Hey, Jane.
Hi, Peter.
So, Jane, you heard my introduction. I mean, I don't know many people. I mean, I wrote a book called The Traveler's Diet, and I made all these recommendations.
I actually
followed my recommendations. I actually lost the weight. And then there was that lost weekend in which it all went out the window for a while. I mean, how do you really stay on that track? Because your book is all about that.
It is. Well, first of all, you have to set reasonable expectations for yourself. And I go by the 90-10 rule, which is 90% of the time I stick to eating clean, eating healthily. But I allow a 10% for waving. I call it my 10% chocolate and wine allowance. Because
well, you know what? You know what? That ratio, Jane, to me, I mean, I would think for most people, it sounds good, but it's not realistic. If I could do 50-50, I think I've been a success.
You'd probably find that you could do 70-30. I mean, I've worked...
Oh, we're negotiating. Okay, I like this.
We're negotiating, yes. Because, yeah, it all comes down to, as I said, the kind of expectations that you set for yourself. If they are too unrealistic, then you're not going to stick with them. You know, I've worked my way up to 90-10.
All right, but let me ask you this.
Healthy habits. Sure.
I'm right here in Mexico. I will be honest with you. I did not come here on a mission to eat kale.
No. But you're in there's plenty, you know, there's plenty of fresh fish. There are vegetables. You don't have to have enchiladas every meal. You do have options. And it's just about making the best choice that you can at that moment.
So what's the biggest mistake that people make in terms of a food choice? Is there one?
The biggest mistake that people make in terms of food choice is too much bad fats, eschewing good carbohydrates, because a lot of people right now are total carbophobes, the term I've coined. They're not eating any grains, they're too scared to, not looking for good lean proteins.
Now, let me ask you this, though. There are two big bad words I want to talk to you about. One is sugar, and the other is alcohol.
Okay.
So let's start with sugar, because. Now, for example, at this hotel, they have an amazing dessert place, all right? You cannot avoid it. In fact, I won't avoid it, and I didn't avoid it. And you walk in there, and it's basically all-you-can-eat dessert, all right? Is that scary enough for you?
That's pretty scary.
I know. But you know what? I didn't go for the heavy chocolate. I didn't go for the heavy cheesecake. I actually had some mango sorbet. Will you forgive me, Jane?
I will absolutely forgive you. And I'm going to ask you, did you enjoy it?
Every last tank of it. No, I ate small portions. But the point is, I could have come back for more. And you know, the real big problem is that people really don't change their lifestyle when they change their location. And when you give them a free pass, you know, this is an all-inclusive hotel, right? So you give them a free pass. It's basically, stand back, I'm coming in for the buffet, and I'm not taking any prisoners, you know.
You just hit the nail on the head there, Peter. You said people aren't going to change their lifestyle. And if you're going to stay healthy on the road, if you're a frequent traveler like you are, it is about establishing a healthy lifestyle, because then you're more likely to stick to it when you're traveling.
See, I knew that. There's the trap. Dessert. There's the trap right there. I'm just terrible at home, too.
But you wrote the book. I read it.
I did write the book.
And
you know what?
Well.
When I followed my own advice, you know how much weight I lost? I lost 75 pounds. So now I've put about 10 on, but I'm still happy with myself, because I see pictures of me when I weighed 75 pounds more and it wasn't pretty. And everybody knows how much I travel. So you really do have to take care of yourself. And it's not just diet and exercise alone. It's as you say in the book, it's a lifestyle philosophy. The name of the book again is Mile High and Healthy. And the author is Jane McAllister. What's the one final tip you'd give everybody?
The one final tip I give everyone, actually, there are three things. It's drink more water, get more sleep, eat more vegetables.
And then drink more water. And then when nobody's looking, you sneak into the all-you-can-eat dessert buffet and create a distraction, a diversion perhaps. And when nobody's looking, then you eat all the cheesecake.
That's it.
Maybe
you can go downstairs and yell fuego.
All right, Jane, really appreciate talking to you. The name of the book again, Mile High. I love the name of the book, Mile High and Healthy. And if you read the book, you actually might be back with more from the Hyatt Regency. I said the Hyatt Regency, didn't I say that? My goodness, the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, as Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. Let's go to one of your emails right now. This is from Robert Leonard, who writes, Peter, I followed your advice as to when I book my airline travel awards as early as possible. In my case, Robert writes, my travel awards were booked almost 1 year in advance. And by the way, most airlines will let you go up to about 330 days in advance. One of my travel awards was booked using the Avios points with British Air. The award was using their One World partner, Air Berlin. Several days ago, my award was canceled about 100 days before my trip. British Air is completely unwilling to rebook me on other One World partners, such as Iberia or on British Air. Do I have any rights when there are alternate flights available? Well, first of all, I would like to know why they canceled it in the beginning. You know, a reservation is an implied contract. So as far as I'm concerned, they're in breach of contract. They certainly didn't cancel the flight 100 days ahead of time because the plane was broken. They didn't cancel it 100 days ahead of time because there was an earthquake. They canceled it just because, and just because isn't good enough. So what I want you to do is email me, Robert, to peter@petergreenberg.com and give us more particulars, your frequent flyer number, the actual award you booked, the actual flight you were on, and we will follow up directly with British Airways, because that's just not acceptable to me. And when it's not acceptable to me, you know what happens next? I make the phone call. And then we'll find out what's really going on here with this sort of like unexpected cancellation of a flight, okay? You got it. Now, moving on to more important things like food. You know, when you go to an all-inclusive resort, and I've said this earlier in the show, the traditional experience up until recently was you didn't have a lot of choice. You had to guess the age of the mystery hot dog in the rotisserie. It wasn't a lot of fun. It was more regimented than freewheeling. And that's certainly not the case here, where you have eight different food establishments ranging from traditional Mexican to Asian fusion. Joining us now, the executive chef of the hotel here, Angel Ibarra. How are you, sir?
Fine, thanks. And you?
I'm very good. You know, you went to school in culinary school in Mexico City, which, by the way, you know, it's for people who don't realize, Mexico has world-class cuisine recognized by UNESCO. I mean, it's seriously a gastronomic experience. And so you bring that training here to Cancun, but it has to be a challenge to service 8 different restaurants.
Yes, of course. So we have many choices in the resort to create experience in the client when coming here with us.
You know, when I was in Mexico City, I discovered a certain dish, and I can't get enough of it, right? Almejas chocolada, the chocolate clams.
Yes, of course.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable. They're giant clams, you guys do a great job of that.
Yes, of course.
What's the biggest challenge, let's say 10 years ago, was basically sourcing food. You don't have the problem now. You can source food anywhere you want now, right? You can get anything you want.
Yes.
So what's your most popular dish here?
The most popular dish is here. So as if it's complicated with the question, because we have done too many choices. But for example, for me, Habaneros, the restaurant there, we have many choices from Mexican dishes, traditional, and we represent in different or new concept.
Which is?
For example, the aguachile. The traditional aguachile we severed and no mixed, everything's so separated to be interactive with the client. So the client need the
so they can go a little spicy, very spicy, call the ambulance.
A little bit spicy, but it's fresh because the dedicated cucumber, so cucumber mixed with the sauce, and that's made and mint, and that's made a little bit fresh.
But you also have an Asian fusion restaurant in the middle of Cancun.
Yes, of course.
So where do those recipes come from?
We have a mix of the cuisine from the Asia, Singapore, or
you had dim sum, and you also had pad thai from Thailand.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of things of Asia. No, usually the restaurants of the resort and all inclusive just offer so things from Japan and China.
Yeah.
And we have Thailand, Singapore, and different lands.
Okay, I have to ask you a question, Angel, and tell me the truth. Any of the restaurants offering chicken fingers?
Yes, of course.
Oh, no. You know why? Because you know, at any resort for the kids, how about some chicken fingers? You know?
Yes, of course, we have. So we serve, for example, here, the chicken fingers with the honey mustard dressing.
Oh, now we're talking. Because with the right amount of honey mustard dressing, I'll eat cardboard.
Yes, of course.
It's the best. It's the best.
Yeah.
All right, but I had pad thai last night for dinner. I have to tell you, it was right on the money.
Thank you very much.
Angel Ibarra, the executive chef here at the Hyatt Ziva, thanks for joining us.
Man. It's a pleasure.
We really appreciate that, but you're not going to see me with chicken fingers. Although, if you want to deliver just honey mustard to my room, I'll have nothing but honey mustard. Okay?
Please be my guest.
Okay. Back right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hyatt Ziva in Cancun. I've been coming to Mexico for almost 40 years. I take that back. I've been coming to Mexico for 43 years. How do you like that? And every time I come, I'm reminded of the rich history here that most people don't often think about. And the beautiful thing about Cancun is you're only about 40 minutes away from it. I mean, anywhere you look, you are in the Mayan culture. And Mexico, to its credit, in recent years, has embraced the idea that this might be a good idea to tell people about it. And not only that, to show them. And joining me now is a great historian with the Mayan Museum, and her name is Jimena Arellano Nunez. Did I get it right?
Yes.
Arellano Nunez, I got it. I mean, you were shaking your head yes when I was doing the introduction, because I remember when I first came down here, nobody was around to talk about the history. It was there, it hadn't changed. Right, but now you're really exhibiting it in a very accessible way, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
What are you doing?
We are a part of the museum that exhibits archaeological pieces from all the Mayan area in Mexico. And also we have an archaeological site, so you can take a really complete visit and know about the Mayan culture while you're in your vacation in Cancun.
I mean, you're not far away from Tulum.
No.
You're not far away from Chichen Itza.
No.
The only thing you can't do, I believe, is you can't climb it anymore. They won't let you climb it.
Well, you can climb at Ekbalam, which
yes.
is an archaeological site in Yucatan, and you can climb at Coba, which is an archaeological site in Quintana Roo. So, yes, you can climb still.
Now, I happen to know that there are 91 steps.
In Cuba?
No, in Chichen Itza.
Yes, but...
you know why I know that?
Why?
I climbed it.
Very nice.
I climbed it with your president, with the President Calderon.
Oh, how nice.
Yes, and what you learn very quickly in that climb, by the way, is the Mayans had much smaller feet than I do.
Yes, they did.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So the climb up is pretty precarious. The climb down is even worse.
Yes, I know that.
So there's a good reason why maybe we shouldn't be climbing it, other than just preserving the actual edifice. It's preserving you.
Yes.
What's the most surprising thing about the Mayan culture and the history that you have here that people aren't expecting?
Well, I have been always amazed about their knowledge about the astronomy, because they were great astronomers. They predicted a lot of astronomic events.
They really had the sun, didn't they? They knew. The thing that was amazing to me about Chichen Itza was the snake coming down.
Yes.
Because they knew at a certain time of the year, it was exactly lined up with the sun. You could look right through everything, right?
Yes, they were amazing observers also.
And also the noise, the bird sound.
Yes.
Right? When you clap your hands, it's the bird.
Yes.
Do you really think they knew that, or they just lucked out?
I think that's the result of lots of years of observation to the stars and to the nature.
I mean, when you think about it wasn't just the fact that they studied it, they worshipped it.
Yes.
I mean, they were the original astrologers here.
Yes.
And they knew the calendar down to the minute.
Yes, they also had two calendars, one for their ritual issues and one for the common ways of living.
I mean, to me, that was eye-opening to see how they had an observatory.
Yes.
And the way that the sun lined up, they had it perfect on the equinox.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What about the rituals? Do you still do you explain the rituals today?
Well, there are a lot of rituals that are explained because of the traditions have arrived until our days. But there are some things that archaeologists are still thinking and researching about, because there are things that if you don't have the context, if you are not there or think the way they used to think, you won't understand.
You know what was truly surprising for me is when I climbed up to the top, the jaguar.
Yes.
You walk into a room and there is this, I mean, it's like, excuse me?
Yes.
Right? What was the symbolism of the jaguar?
The jaguar was the lord of the night. The jaguar was the sun of the night because of the color, because he's a feline. He hunts at night. He almost lives at night. So that's the symbolism. He was the lord of the night, the lord of the dark things, but the one that lived inside the cave that was all the underworld, but the origin of the living things.
And of course, the whole concept was the underworld, about passing to the underworld.
Yes.
All the drawings was about your journey to the underworld.
Yes.
But the jaguar, what was interesting, they protected that jaguar. Only very few people got to see that jaguar.
Yes. It's almost for a... security reasons, as you said, it's a little dangerous to climb up. And all the pieces, the archaeological pieces, unfortunately, we are not safe from the dealing, the black market.
Yes.
So you have to protect the things that maybe explain
you what you have to protect your cultural heritage, and the looting has to stop.
Yes.
And to a certain extent, now you've been able to control that.
Yes.
And of course, in Mexico City, you have an amazing museum.
Yes,
the Anthropological Museum there, which I recommend highly. So if you don't see it here, you don't think you've seen enough here, go to Mexico City and spend 3 days in that museum. It's unbelievable.
Yes, it's worth it.
It really is worth it. And even though you can't climb Chichen Itza, you can still stand there at the right time of the day and see the sun coming down that snake, right?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Jimena Arellano Nunez, the historian at the Mayan Museum. Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you to you, Mr. Greenberg.
You're welcome. De nada. Okay. Hey, by the way, that music means we're out of time for the whole show. Got a lot of people to thank. Dara Stone, our chief producer. Jeff Ryder doing the boards back in Connecticut. Tim Hill, our engineer. Holly Zoyer, Cherie Stevens, and of course, the indomitable Cheryl Andrews. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week from a different location somewhere around the world. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.